Hey, this is Miss Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you are listening to Tales from the Tub. It's the Dog Days of Podcasting, and this is my entry for Monday, August 24th, 2015. This is a conversation with Thomas Jancis and Tiara Bonser. It's long, rambling, and may contain explicit language. Hi, this is Miss Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid, and we are here with my very good improv friend, Thomas Jancis. See, I know his whole name, who I have known as Jancis for, God, like a decade when we met doing Buffy Between the Lines. He played a pig.
I did.
Played a stuffed pig, but I'm going to ask him to introduce himself and his lovely companion.
Fair enough. Yes, my name's Thomas Jancis. I said I got a new Melissa through Buffy Between the Lines. As pointed out, I am actually sitting in the room with another person. Her name's Tiara. We're currently at drama school together. And the moment that you mentioned that I played a stuffed pig, she just gave me the most withering of looks.
I would expect nothing more.
Yeah, I think this is the nice thing that, as Melissa's pointed out, we haven't talked in a good few years, so there's a nice sort of combination of my past colliding with my present at the moment. So, yes, I'm a writer, I'm an actor, improv. Tiara, do you want to introduce yourself?
Well, I would ask you to introduce me, but last time you introduced me, it was sad and pathetic. I'd like to put out on the record that we once went around a circle and introduced everyone in our class to someone teaching, but this time we decided to introduce each other. It was my turn to introduce Thomas, and I gave him a rather amazing introduction that could have as easily gotten him an art, like a contract for a theater, or a job, or a date. It was that good. And waiting for him to then introduce me, he looked over, put his squishy hand out, and said, "This is Tiara. She has a good heart." And that was it. And although that's nice, he knows so much more about me than that. And that was it. So I'll leave that as my introduction.
So basically he's been clueless and befuddled for as long as I've known him, and the trend continues.
Yes, it does indeed.
But we love him anyway.
Yes, we do.
So I'm going to ask each of you, and you can interrupt each other and pick one day together, or you can answer separately, but what's a typical day for each of you?
Typical day? At the moment, just a bit of a odd...
You know what? Wait. What? Stop. Back up a minute and see if you can give Tiara a proper introduction.
You, as I said, we're by a train station, so you might need to repeat that.
Back up a moment and let's see if you can actually give Tiara a proper introduction.
Okay, a proper introduction. Okay, this is Miss Tiara Bonser. Yeah, there you go. She is a dramaturg and a performer, and she's also involved in improvisation. She's currently in a theatre company named Bark, where they do some very exciting and interesting things, including recreating a scene from American Psycho. I have worked with her multiple times, and in that time I have seen her walk face first into a piano. She has punched me multiple times on stage.
She's punching you now? Because she totally should be.
Yes. And again, she has a good heart.
Well, that's better.
It's an answer.
Well, that was nice, Thomas.
Thank you.
All right, so now, what's a typical day for each of you?
Typical day. Okay, so as I said, we are currently in the final stages of we're doing a master's at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. And to be fair, we haven't really had a typical day for most of the year. Things keep changing.
Oh. Typical day is just work your ass off and then get up and work your ass off again in various modes of being.
We get up, we have breakfast. Do you have breakfast?
No.
I don't know anything about you.
He knows nothing about me. No, you do. But you don't know about my day, I guess. I mean, it depends on how detailed you want to get, but I generally...
I don't need to know about, like, when you brush your teeth, so...
I get up in the morning as late as I possibly can because I'm knackered every single night, and I get on a train, and I show up to rehearsal, and I'm there for 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 hours, and then I come home, and I sometimes eat dinner, sometimes I'm too tired for that, and I work more on theater stuff and our show, and I go to bed at too late, like 1 or 2, and then get up again.
I'm similar. I go, usually I'm in bed by 3 a.m. because I'm a nocturnal person and used to working with people on very different timescales. Get up. If I can get my company mate to rehearse with me, it's a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, so... At the moment, it's been a lot of sort of sending emails to various places, sorting out marketing and stuff. It's going to be nice to have a break, really. You know, sort of now we're coming towards the end of it. It's nice to actually be able to go off and... I hear holidays are nice.
Yes.
I've heard of those.
Yeah.
What are those?
We don't know.
So when do each of you finish school?
We're finishing sort of...
End of September.
End of September, yeah.
Wow, that is soon.
Yes.
You have to leave the sheltered academic life.
It's scary.
You know, the thing
not
is,
that theater is ever
course
sheltered.
Is so not sheltered.
No.
They just throw you out into all the things that they into everything and then just expect you to get your hands dirty, basically. So this last part we're performing our pieces professionally in venues. So we're doing the full thing And actually, I don't think they even grade us for this part, do they?
No, not really. It's sort of more kind of, have you shown some kind of progress and can you show that you can collaborate? Great, well done. Now
yeah.
write a 2,500-word essay about an aspect of it and off you go, really.
See, if it were really challenging, they'd grade you based on ticket sales.
That would be the interesting thing.
How heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? It's not fair. Art shouldn't be judged that way anyway, but...
I mean, because I, at time recording, I did... my show yesterday, and we got a good number of people, but most of them were from the course, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
We actually, you know, sort of, considering they gave us the space for free, we were actually turned a profit, which is nice.
Well, see, that's good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you each tell me what your shows are?
Sure.
Or would you rather not talk about it?
No, I'm happy to talk about it. My show is it's a two-hander about a touring company of storytellers, and just before it's very sort of interactive, very well fun. Tiara's nodding, so that means it is fun. But just before the show starts, the third member of our company has just left, up and vanished, and my character's kind of in love with her, and that kind of. Okay, my character is very...
He's completely cut up by it. That's the whole thing.
He might have a pretty major breakdown during the show, but, so it's kind of watching the participation between the audience. The other character is very much of the mind, let's keep doing the show, let's keep it going. My character is trying to be romantic and go, I will go off and I will find her wherever she's gone and we can...
Oh, but I think you're short-selling it, Tom.
Am I?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't mind.
Please do.
I think the show is about Tom and Lawrence, and they, in this most recent iteration, had the bravery to sort of accept and own that it's actually them, and that there's not this huge fictional thing going on, that and that what happens in the hour that you're with them is who they are. And so they have some fictional elements that they mix in, like this third person, this woman, this lover character. But it really is about both of them and what they believe about storytelling and what they think about. Like Lawrence has a very classical training, so he'll tell the Odyssey in the original Greek if he can.
Yeah.
And Tom is not so much that way. He's much more about updating stories and that kind of thing. So there's two tracks. There's the narrative of the people and this love relationship and a friendship, and then there's this underlying thing talking about stories and why we tell stories and how our lives are just stories that we tell. And so I think that in the end there's this kind of heading between these two men about what they think that means. And what I see in it is that Tom and his character is sort of disillusioned by stories and the romance of stories, because that's not true to what life turns out to be, and everything can't just be woven into a narrative and you know, make it all better. This person that he loved just up and left for no apparent reason. And Lawrence, on the other hand, is trying to sew it all together in this perfect little frame of a story. So actually, through their device, their content is reflected in their form, and I think that that's very elegant.
Okay, Janice, you need to hire her to do your marketing.
I really do. She's well done.
Tiara, will you tell me about what your project is?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I'm not sure I can speak so well about my own. It's hard. Our company's called Bark, and we are exploring how to bring the audience into the process of creating a piece of work. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. So we're really looking at the way we develop work is through creative response. So we go and see things, or go to a museum or something, and then we come back and have a creative response to that. And that's kind of where we begin with material. So we ask the question of sort of, well, why do we make certain shows and why do people want to see them, and what sometimes theater seems to have nothing to do with its audience. And we think that if you're going to have live performance, it needs to be fully alive. And it can only really be fully alive if it is responding to the audience in the room and they are part of a finished process. We kind of like metaphorically like to think of it as the difference of if you saw, let's say, a Vermeer painting compared to one of Da Vinci's sketches that are unfinished. And it's that a Vermeer is beautiful and it's a stunning piece of work, but somehow, since it's so perfect, you can't really, you can only just look at it. And it doesn't really need you to be there because it's already finished. But if you see a Da Vinci sketch, you have to be there looking at it for it to be completed, because not everything is filled in. And it has this interaction, even though it's a 2D thing. So when we make work, we want to make it so that you have to be there to finish it. So it involves a lot of improvisation, and we try to build in sort of the risk-taking involved in the performance to make sure that we are testing the liveness of it. So that's kind of artistically the underlying principles of what we're trying to explore as a company. And this show, which is called Number One, was based on our trip to the Forensic and Criminology Museum.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it kind of went off on this spurt that we didn't fully expect, but we have been experimenting with looping and repetition, and we thought a lot about crime and murder and how it's glamorized in media and in film, and we wanted to sort of nudge up against that. So we've taken some scenes out of films and we loop them, and then we've taken some transcripts from actual interviews with serial killers, and we're trying to figure out what it is about, why we're also like have this morbid fascination with this, like with these movies of like American Psycho, and even there's a film on Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy. I mean, if you look them up, they're endless. Why we love it, kind of why people are so interested in seeing the pictures, and it's sort of everywhere. So we are doing a show about that, and sort of in the end, hopefully, we just let the audience decide what they want to see. Because the question is really, do you really want to see it? Do you want to see the violence and the gore and the reality of what people do to each other? Or are you more comfortable just seeing the glamorized version of it? And so we've been going around with that, And it's still not done. We're performing on September 5th, and we're still working it out.
Working for
it. We've got a little time.
Yeah.
Very little, but...
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to wish you good luck, but I hope it's successful, and I hope you get out of it what you want.
Thank you.
It sounds really fascinating.
It's quite fun.
Yeah.
I think it's quite fun see it.
It's been quite fun sort of running into members of the company and just going, just sort of sitting down and you're like, how are you? And they're like, great. Do you want to hear about Dharma? And you're like, yes, sure. And
now then, we just quote from one of these films all the time. We just do the scene from American Psycho in pubs and other places just because we can.
I want to interrupt my list of questions to ask. Tiara, where are you from?
I'm from Colorado.
Okay. Because your accent is a mix of a bunch of things.
Is it?
Yeah. You've got just a little bit of English creeping in there.
Oh, no. How horrible.
Blame Thomas. It's probably his fault.
I know.
He's really good at accepting blame.
You've learned that, haven't you? Just I'm doing a kind of game. This is your fault.
Haven't changed much, I see,
nope.
Thomas.
But it's nice to know that he can be consistent, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. That is true. Hey.
What made you choose to the school where you are, coming from Colorado?
I went to all the way up to high school in Colorado, and then I went to college at Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I graduated there from theater school and worked a bit. But during that time, I took a trip to London and did a literature and theater class combination. And I absolutely loved the theater I saw. And it was so... I had spent my time feeling like I wasn't very satisfied with the type of theater that was being made in my school and in Boston and sort of around. And I couldn't figure out... I just didn't realize that there was such a thing as devising theater. But I think all along I had really been thinking about basically all those principles. So I knew I wanted to come back to London, and sort of my life came to a point where I needed to do something, take a big step and make a big change. And I thought London was the place for me. So when I just was going to get here no matter what. So I tried to get visas, I tried to get hired, and that wasn't working. And I decided to look into schools and basically got accepted into Central and a couple of other places, and I came over.
And here you are now.
And here I am, and I want to stay here forever.
Oh.
Is there any particular thing you miss about living in the States?
My family.
I will tell you that I have a friend in Wales who misses peanut butter.
You will tell me what?
I have a friend in Wales who misses peanut butter.
Oh, you know, I don't miss any... Well, okay.
I'll
tell you what.
Yeah.
I miss my family, absolutely. I mean, I totally, totally miss them. I miss the mountains and the air. And I miss some things that are cultural. I don't miss any types of food or anything, but sometimes I miss I don't want to insult you, Thomas.
Oh, please do.
I think sometimes it's harder to like befriend people. No, this is just
no,
a huge generalization.
No, go on.
I think
it's quite.
I'm not slamming you. No. I'm from a small community, and so everyone is very, very friendly all the time, and I thought that when I moved to the city, like in Boston, that I had gotten used to people not being that way, you know, living in a city. But I think there's a whole other sensibility of just a different culture, and sometimes I kind of miss the gregarious openness of people. But I say that, and then I think, like, that's so not fair, because I've met so many beautiful people who are completely amazing. So
we did a show a couple of months ago, which the whole content was, you know, trying to find moments of connection in the city in London, and they're sort of going, do you realize no one ever talks on the train? And then most of us going, well, we talk on the train.
I know. I was going to say, I talk to people on the train, and they think I'm nuts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or they think I'm trying to sleep with them. It's like one or the other. You're either insane or you're trying to get laid. I'm like, well, hello. I'm just being friendly.
I'm just trying to get home.
I think it is a very cultural thing. And but if it, don't feel bad about slamming the English, because in the interview I did 2 days ago, we totally insulted the French. So, you know, we're equal opportunity.
That's fair.
No, I don't. It's not a slam. It's just a difference. You know, it's not something that I see and I think, oh, I dislike it and I wish it was different. It's just an adjustment, you know? And I think it is so funny how much you can't expect cultures to be different. Like, in some ways, I think I have more in common culturally with people I've met who are Mexican, Italian, than I do with British people. And I kind of always assumed that we would have so much in common because I don't know why we broke away from England.
You threw our tea in the water.
I thought we would have some things, but it's actually very, very, very different. And I think, I don't know, I just think it's interesting, I guess. Mm. But some things I miss about it.
Do you mind if I ask where in Colorado you're from?
Pueblo.
Okay. I'm asking because I grew up in Georgetown.
I have even no idea where that is.
Georgetown is the last little town before you get to all the ski resorts.
Oh, north.
North, very north.
How north of Denver?
Maybe an hour.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's up a 6% grade hill that we used to coast down in a Volkswagen.
Wow, fun. Did you like Colorado?
Georgetown is a very, very small town. I mean, it's like a mile by a mile. And it's an old mining town, so it was a great place to be seven. But I don't think I would have liked
17?
To be there. Yeah, well, by then I was in California, so that's a whole different thing. But No, it was a great place to be seven. It was one of those idyllic little towns where it was totally safe to be out after dark, and they would freeze over the baseball diamond in the park for us in winter, so we didn't have to go out to the reservoir to skate. I mean, it was just quintessentially. John Denver, when he was alive, used to shoot a lot of his specials there.
Oh, have you been to the Hanging Lakes?
I have not.
Oh, dang it! They're so good.
add it to the list of things to go see.
Put it on the list. When you go back to Colorado, go there.
I haven't been back in forever. I wanted to take my husband. He's from South Dakota, and so he's used to flat places. And, I mean, he travels a lot for work, so he's been to India, and he's been to China, and he had an hour in Macau once when the plane had issues, but he's never been to Colorado.
You've got to take him.
And I think he would like it, because he loves mountains, having grown up in the plains.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I know, I'm getting to the point where I'm ready for a little vacation in some semblance of nature. I thought Scotland might do the trick, but...
Wrong type of nature for you, isn't
it? I know,
it
is. Yeah. It is a bit of the wrong type of nature. I like to be in the trees, but we'll see.
Oh, Scotland's nice. It's, again, they've got a mountain. They've got one in Edinburgh.
A mountain, I love that.
Yeah, they've got Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh, and there's a few up there if you want to go up. I just like the idea of going, these are the wrong type of mountains.
It's true, though, that there can
but it
be.
It makes a difference.
Yeah. I like the kinds of things where... When I'm hiking around, I can't see what's around the next place. And if you're in England or something, you can just see everything that's out there. I like to not. My dad and I call it like the next corner syndrome, because when he and I get together, we're unstoppable, because that's what we always do. We're like, oh, we'll just go around the next, over that next, over the next thing, and over the next, and around the next corner, and then we end up really far away. But in England, it's spoiled because you can see everything.
I like that as criticism. England, you can just see too
much.
You
can see too much.
Well, that's the thing about going around London, where everyone, you know, sort of like going, if you can walk, and you can pretty much see all the landmarks, you know, you can, especially on the South Bank, you're like, there's the Eye, there's the Tower of London, there's the Globe, you know, it's within an hour's walk. It's just...
I like the mystery of not seeing everything.
Well, but I think that's very similar in most large cities around the world. I mean... You go to Paris or Tokyo.
Although you're being unfair, because you're quite unfair, Thomas. Because London is everything that no one to me. All those things are there, and they're kind of, that's the surface level. But there's so much to this city. I have not even scratched the surface in about a year. Barely. And there's always new places and festivals and music and things going on and history that you don't know and hidden buildings with other history. And
I think, like, again, about the city, you're still going around, you're like, oh, what's this fire? You're like, well, there was a terrible fire here, but if you just go over there during the bombing, you know, raid, it's just, as I said, it's just history, part of one history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely.
That's interesting. It's quite the adventure. I'm going to go back to my list now and ask each of you what's something other than theater that sets your soul on fire.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
I take away the easy answer. I'm sorry.
Set my... Oh, wow.
Other than theater.
Oh. That's so hard. What a slicing question. Oh, God.
This is probably...
Other than theater? Oh, no. You've taken away my fire.
Is there something other than theater? Is there something other than theater?
Yes. Yes, there is. Definitely. I'm just trying to look at... I'm looking at Tom like, give me something, Tom, that I love. Tell me.
You like looking around corners? No.
No. I love... Can I just say art? I love museums and I love... art, and I like I love to paint.
Well, every day is a good day when you paint.
I believe every day is a good day when you paint. Yeah, that's true. Thomas, it's got to be reading, writing,
yes,
books,
no,
poetry.
Yeah, reading.
History.
Yeah.
I'm better at English history than Thomas is.
It's true. She's bought a poster of the English kings, and so will occasionally come over and is like, let me tell you about George
II.
Let me tell you about the Battle of Tewkesbury. So you're learning, yeah? It's impressive.
That's a great way to put it, though. Puts my soul on fire. Ooh. It's a combination of those things, though. I think... I'm such a nerd, I realized just now. Because I'd have to say it's like museums and traveling because I'm totally, totally, totally turned on by museums, actually.
How do you access museums? Do you want to see everything, or are you the sort of person who will spend like an hour looking at a painting?
I will read everything.
Mm.
I try to see as much as I can. I won't spend an hour looking at one thing, but I will read everything I can. And I often, I think people think I'm one of those jerks who's on their phone in the museum, but no, I'm just Googling things.
Yeah.
Or writing. I also will like open up a notepad on my phone and make notes about stuff I want to research later or people I want to read biographies on or something. So that's, I think it's that something about learning, I suppose.
Is there a particular museum or exhibit that's really surprised you?
I like how you look down and you're like, I suppose I like learning. It's a good thing.
A particular museum, you said, or exhibition that surprised me? Well, surprised me.
See, now I know Thomas's tactics. He brings you on so that he doesn't have to answer questions.
It's kind of hard for me to hear. I didn't hear what you said.
I said Thomas has this tactic. He brings you on so that he doesn't have to answer the question.
Ah, yes. No, I'll avoid it.
Answer the woman's question.
Oh, things that set my soul on fire. Again, it's sort of... I'll piggyback on your answer for a bit. Again, sort of just museums, being able to... It's actually something I was working on in the show, the idea of sort of... being a flaneur and just that kind of, I just like being present in a space. A bit like you were saying earlier, you know, especially in London, there's just so much out there that if you just, this is the thing that if I'm ever trying to go, you know, I have to meet at a certain time, I need to leave myself a lot more time because I'm probably just going to wander off somewhere and go and have a little exploration and just be able to go, oh, this is a cool little, I don't know, it's, but books, reading. Haven't read as much as I normally do this year because doing rather than reading about stuff. Again, it's that terribly sad thing when people are like, so what makes you happy? And then you just sit there and they're like, you're like, no, I understand the concept of happy. I am happy. It's just what's the tied down to. And again, it's not. I never had pets, so it's not, that isn't something that kind of. I connect to.
What sets your soul on fire, Thomas? Not what makes you happy.
Are they not the same thing?
How could they be?
They don't necessarily have to be. It can be something that inspires you, but doesn't necessarily make you happy if it causes you to have to work.
Yes. Mm. Imagine the muses just lighting you on fire. What does that? Literally lighting you on fire.
Okay, but is that same sort of thing that, like you, I pick up on random things and go, oh, that's an interesting piece of trivia. Actually, can link it back into the podcast, what I do. A lot of the podcast is Lawrence trying to sort of make jokes and me just going, ah, interesting fact about this. Let's talk about when Dutch merchants consumed their prime minister for going to war with France. You know, just...
I have listened to your first episode.
Yes. It's
As I told you, I aspirated my mocha.
which do you remember which particular part caused that reaction?
I don't, but it was not one of his jokes or voices. It was you.
Hurrah! See, I can be popular.
Well, Lawrence is a bit chatty.
Mm. A bit of a chatty Kathy.
Mm, indeed.
But yeah. I think you balance each other well, because he's like off in the cosmos, and you, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you ground him.
Yeah, wow. That says a lot, doesn't it?
It does, yes. Again, this is going back to the question, you know, sort of theatre normally, and sort of...
All right, you can answer theatre.
Right, let's talk about how great theatre is.
Theatre, because theatre is the combination of all the things. That's why it's so, it sets a person ablaze, so to speak.
Theatre is life.
Yes, absolutely, and... trying to be able to, well, both of us trying to portray that on stage. You know?
And it's so, you have to learn so much all the time, and you can choose to focus on any subject and grow and to share that with people. And then it, like, you have to encounter yourself as well, and damn, it's so amazing.
I think the thing you didn't pitch yet, but we were thinking, and then when you said, okay, fine theatre, both of us just suddenly sprang forward and were like, yes, great, we can talk about it. You know,
I could feel the electricity in the room change, yes.
And this has been the wonderful thing.
I was trying to challenge you. I don't ask favourites. You have to be at least give me credit for that. I have not asked you a favourite anything.
That's exactly. That's an excellent point. But again, we're sort of like being here, you know, getting to see a range of exciting stuff and... And it is a range, you know, sort of like...
Sometimes it's quite shit.
Do you want to talk about King Lear?
Oh, no. I felt that it was in poor taste of me to speak ill of King Lear with sheep on your podcast because I thought this could get back around.
I would kind of love it if you torpedoed your career. You're like the King... What? My phone just made a weird noise there. We went to see a production that sold out, you know, everyone wants to get a ticket.
Yeah.
King Lear with sheep. And you think, okay, this sounds crass, this sounds like it's going to be terrible, but I'm sure they're going to do more of it. No, a man comes on stage, he's like, oh, the actors aren't here on time. And eventually the actors turn up, and they're sheep in costume, and it's him just going, why aren't you talking to me? Is it something I did? Oh, I'll just do the play by myself. And it just does little excerpts and then picks up a sheep. It's like, oh, my daughter, it's...
It was such a gimmick. It was such a manipulation to get us to think, oh, such cute sheep. And I personally have no relationship with sheep because I think they are disgusting. And I have been around when they have been sheared. And they're not cute anyway. So you don't have my sympathy there. But
I
most
think
people
would...
Hmm?
I think they're delicious.
Yes.
That's my relationship with sheep.
They're quite good to eat, but in any case, he completely... It was just an exploitation of the sheep, essentially. Mm. I guess I was sort of... I try not to go in expecting something, but if you're going to make the proposition, of course, then what we're all there to see is how you do it, right? I'm not expecting the full King Lear.
No.
But I would expect some thoughtfulness, and I suppose... I kind of expected that he would get us to have a connection with the sheep sort of in the same way that we would build a connection with a puppet and sort of imbue them with character. And then we would end up having this kind of transferal of our empathy, I suppose, toward them, even though they're not acting.
There's 8 sheep or so on stage, and he only focused on like one or two.
Yeah.
You're like, why did you need to have?
And why dress them up? And then they had all this wankiness about, oh, Rath, we're talking about what is it to be an actor? Blah blah blah. It was just so imposed.
I think my favourite bit was because I was sitting next to you, and there's a section where he refers to Cordelia, and he says, oh, you know, she's wonderful. She's like a Botticelli painting of Judi Dench. And, well, you're a fan. You're a fan of Judi Dench.
I'm a huge fan of Judi Dench.
And so when he said that, Tiara just suddenly straightened in her chair and looked at me and was like, how dare he? And I said, if that was the highlight of the entire... just, I think there was a little bit of, you know, sort of us trying to go, oh, you know, people buying tickets, what fools. And they're like, well, they got our money. They're doing extra shows. They're sold out, you know.
And actually, I've seen a lot of work that I think failed, but that I walk out and I'm not kind of... I don't have a bad taste in my mouth, you know, because we do work that's experimental and hard, and we fail sometimes. And it isn't about it being, oh, a quote-unquote great show or not, but... because it can fail and still there can still be so much there, and see that the artistry and the questioning and so I'm probably the easiest person you could get to sort of side with something that's experimental or whatever. But I think it's pretty bad if I'm so sympathetic toward that and I walk out feeling like I got kind of the turnaround basically, and that's really not a great feeling to have as an audience member.
And then. Great. People were saying, well, what did the guy do? What else has he done? And we're like, we have no idea because they don't give him any credit. They credit the sheep. I'll tell you what the sheep have done. Yeah. They've all been on The Apprentice. But
you're kidding.
Yeah. All he did was insult Dame Judi Dench.
And for that.
How disappointing.
You shall never be forgiven.
I'm wondering now if there's something specific about Lear that causes people to do horrible things to it.
Mm.
I saw a production when I was in high school, which is probably before you were born, that was in Ashland, Oregon at their Shakespeare Festival. Mm. And they had one of those things where they bring in all the high school students and tell them about the set and the lights and how they're doing things. And they set it in Stonehenge.
Oh.
But they had all the sets on hydraulics. So instead of having actual scene changes, they would just sort of gradually morph from scene to scene. And they made the mistake of telling 16-year-olds this. So for the entire 3 hours, none of us were watching the play. We were just watching the sets move.
Mm.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
See, you can find stuff in that, but I'm trying to think about...
See, the problem there, in my expert opinion, is they failed to see what was in the show, what was really there. And if the interest was in, well, either you say, we don't need this production because it's taking away from the story we're telling, or you say, wow, suddenly our show is about the Stonehenge moving around on hydraulics and these rocks seem to be performing more than the play it is. Mm. And then you have to look at the reality of that and find some way to acknowledge it in the performance so that the audience see the other thing that's going on and they're not romanticized by it, but they're seeing both things happening simultaneously, because that could be kind of interesting.
I suspect that the audience that did not go to the lecture did not have the same problem.
That's true, probably.
But also they had told us that during heightened dramatic parts of the production, they would cut the air conditioning.
Ooh.
And then if you were in the sound booth, because that's where the air conditioning switch was, you could actually watch the audience lean forward because there was this subtle noise that was no longer there.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
And so now whenever I go to a play, I'm sitting there half in the back of my mind, if I get bored with something, going, okay, are they going to cut the air conditioning now?
They do that.
This is not a good way to experience theater.
Yeah, why would they do that? Just to get people uncomfortable?
I guess.
Apparently, just by cutting it for just a second, it was just enough of a change in the room. Because air conditioning, especially here where everything is central air, when it turns off, you usually don't notice it.
Ew.
If you're in a big enough room. But it's just enough of a subtle change that subconsciously it makes people pay attention.
That's really rude to do that. I think that's just... You can't manipulate people.
I don't think
people.
It's necessary. If the play isn't doing it, you shouldn't have to help.
Yeah, I have been totally moved by seeing all the mechanics of something and seeing that a person is themselves or themselves and acting... and been completely moved by that more than I have been by the full fiction. Because in that case, when they do crazy stuff like that, I'm like, why don't you just make a film? Really, you just want to make a film, so you should do that.
Probably.
I'm just thinking about air conditioning now.
Are you sweaty, Thomas?
It's a very hot. It's hotter than Barcelona at the moment.
You look sweaty.
What does hotter than Barcelona mean to you?
What does Barcelona mean to me? it's one of those, again, a few years ago, I had people coming over to perform from Miami, and it was actually, while they were here during the summer, it was hotter than it was in Miami, and they were like, it'll be fine, and I was like, nope, there is no air conditioning in this country, you know.
Yeah,
so,
that's crazy.
And,
that's one thing I miss.
And that's, so when you're speaking about all turning the air conditioning off in theatre, I'm like, it must be nice to have air conditioning in theatre. I mean, we keep going to see all these sort of black box style shows.
Sweaty.
Oh, those are not well ventilated.
Terribly. There's well, you're going to be performing in a converted warehouse, which is renowned for getting boiling hot. The Rag Factory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See, you guys are going to be running around this hot, sweaty. You're going to have fun. You're going to have a lot of fun.
You're going to be there sweating.
Yes. I'll sit quietly in the corner and sweat away.
Well, as long as you're quiet.
Don't make too much noise. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to ask Jancis this question. I'm going to ask Tiara the next one. So, Jancis.
Yes.
If you could pick just one, and don't overthink it, just off the top of your head, historical figure, celebrity, or fictional character to have dinner with, who would you choose?
Oh. Okay. Oh, yeah. Bum, bum, bum. No, I don't.
While you're thinking about that, I'm going to ask Tiara if there's a book, movie, album, TV show, or song that is particularly meaningful to her.
Particularly meaningful.
Well, actually, when you said it, the first thing that came to mind was the song I just was listening to last night called Used by a group called Wyvern Lingo.
Okay.
And it's just really beautiful. It's like a it's probably more than three parts harmony, but they're doing it in a cappella, these three women, and I think it's particularly meaningful to me. It's particularly meaningful to me because I think that, it's just sort of about a relationship and feeling used by someone and kind of sending them on their way. And I don't know. I guess it's sort of relevant to my life.
All right. Jancis, do you have an answer for me yet?
A couple of years ago, had to write a play that my director had gone to an exhibit of photos by Francesca Woodman, who was a female artist and photographer in the 1980s, and she threw herself out of she's 26, she defenestrated herself out of an apartment building. And then all of a sudden, they went into her apartment and found all these amazing photos. And so it became this
I know her.
Yes, they made a documentary about her called The Woodmans. And so I spent 2 years sort of writing a play about her, although we were like, you know, if the Woodmans... I'm just telling the internet now that I basically just... And the way the play was working, it was like, Tiara's going to see that a lot of my themes work through my work here, but people's reactions to this missing woman, in my version of the story, the woman just vanishes. And sort of, and again, from having spent so much time researching this person, she seemed really interesting. And when you watch, they have video footage of her in the documentary, and you kind of, from reading stuff about her, you expect this very sort of grim, you know, oh, I'm doing very feministic work. But no, she was light, bubbly, very high-pitched voice, and just, it's about getting to know people complexly. And I just think she'd probably be a nice person to have a conversation with, have some meal, and then get drunk, you know.
And then make sweet, passionate love.
Yes, Tiara, I want to have sex with
dead. I didn't... There's a difference between having sex, Thomas, and making sweet, passionate love.
Are we doing this as a Shakespearean thing, where we're just like, I want to hold your
hand? I want
hand.
To know her.
I want to know her better.
All right.
Apart from that,
go ahead. Last question each.
Mm-hmm.
But for both of you, each of you, what's a piece of wisdom or advice that you've either given or received that you think other people should hear?
I think some of the best advice I've been given is advice from my mother, really, where she it's kind of like the way I think both of us try and live our lives, and it's being aware of windows of opportunity. It's that especially in kind of the work I'm doing, these things can go, you know, opportunities can disappear so quickly. But it's all, similarly, it's like know your windows of opportunity, but also learn how to pick your fights. It's a little bit, you know, sometimes it's better not to say the thing. I think...
Sort of like four or five bits of wisdom.
A piece of wisdom is, if you're going to have a life goal and ultimately, just tone it down to one. Tone it down to one thing. Don't babble. That's my piece of advice to the world. Do your best not to babble.
Oh.
Tiara, your turn.
My mom writes me love letters for every day of the month and sends them to me, and then I open them up each night and with her.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It is. She's an absolutely stunning human being. And so sometimes what she's written in the note is from a conversation we've had before, and then I'm sort of catching up with it. So we might have talked, and then in her note she wrote something about, you know, something we talked about last month. And one of them that I opened, I'm trying to word it like she did, I will fail, but she basically said, I wish I was eloquent right now. It was something like, when, like, people can give you positive feedback or compliments, but you won't learn something from those. And you will learn something from I guess the other side. And I think it had to do with, we had done a showing of a piece we were working on, and I felt as though I had opened my heart a little bit, and then we got just like crushed in our feedback, and I was really sort of crushed by it. And I think what she was, you know, telling me was that, you know, you could have sat there and people could have complimented you on certain things, and it would have felt great, but you wouldn't have been able to grow. And it was kind of painful when you got a response that wasn't that sort of praise that you wanted or something, but in the end you ended up being better. And so it's something about that that
sweet. Yeah, again, just going back to mine, which is like seven different strings of stuff, and yours is just like, take the bad with the good. That's nice.
It's not even I think we go around looking for validation from people a lot, and that's part of life, but to realize that sometimes the useful thing is the one you don't want to hear, or that someone would care about you enough to maybe tell you what you don't want to hear, is really important to know that and life, I guess.
Well, again, sort of personally, but the show I just did, that Tiara came in the week before and just sat down and went, okay, right, you've got about six shows in this, just tone it down. And just the, sort of the reaction of, especially Lawrence, got incredibly thrown by that. And ultimately, you saw both versions of the show. It just, it all comes back to theatre, really, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah. Thomas. Yeah. They did an amazing show. That's all I have to say. Mm. It was amazing. They completely pulled out a new one, and it was beautiful.
What did I do? I ended up face planting into the floor. I broke my boots. It's we actually had a wonderful moment where, because we start telling George and the Dragon, and we obviously need to pick a member of the audience to play the dragon, and we got to that point, and it's like, and then came a dragon, at which point a latecomer walked in, stood in the doorway, and we just went, here's our dragon.
And he growled.
He growled in the doorway. Yeah, he roared in the doorway.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was fantastic. It was such a beautiful moment.
One of those things that only happens in live theater.
Absolutely, yeah.
But see, the thing is about that that I would love to highlight for Thomas is that it is the most satisfying thing to see people have some trust in themselves and then get up and perform. And he and Lawrence have never viewed themselves as improvisers, as far as I can tell, but they are amazing improvisers, and they were just on fire. They took into account everything that was happening live in the space, and it completely informed their piece, and they still went with it, and they acknowledged everything, like nothing slipped through, because they were so electric and so alive. And that is where the power is in the work that they can do, in my opinion.
I said, I'll just bring you on to say nice things about
me. I know. He wrote the stuff down. I'm reading from a script right now.
We've never met before, now, have we?
Yeah.
He's paying you for this, right?
I definitely, yeah, exactly.
At least dinner.
Dinner.
All right. I'm going to wrap this up because I asked you for 20 minutes and it's been an hour. Thank you for that, by the way.
Oh, a pleasure.
Where can each of you be found on the net, in media, etc.?
Okay. The podcast I do that I realize I haven't talked about really at all is the Broken Bird podcast. We're on iTunes. Multiple episodes coming out, including one with Bark, which is probably one of the most chaotic hours that I've ever lived in my life. There was five very excited people around one microphone. And without spoiling anything, a song turns up at one point.
Indeed.
Again, it was probably one of my favorite moments of the year.
I know you're in iTunes, but do you have a website for it?
Yes. If you go to brokenbirdcompany.com, there's the details about the company and the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm also at Thomas Jancis on Twitter, which, my Twitter, most people find either very exciting or very confusing, or the best, which is both. So
I find your Twitter feed to be incredibly amusing.
Hooray! Sponsor?
Tiara, how about you?
I can be found at barktheatre.com. And by I mean my company called Bark. And we...
Theatre spelled the British way, right?
That's correct.
Bathed to Mermaid is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartell and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 International License. Music for this episode was provided by Mebio's Music Alley, a great resource for PodSafe music. Visit them at music.mebio.com. The opening song is Soap in a Bathtub by Stony. The closing song is You Can Use My Bathtub by Little Tom. The Bathtub Mermaid is produced and recorded using Bossjock and Audacity. You can contact me by leaving a comment at the website, www.bathtubmermaid.com, by finding me on Twitter, at Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, or by sending an email to Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, at starfleet.com. Thanks for listening, and remember... never let your bathwater get too cold. Deep inside. And still it shows. But you can use my bathtub. Understand, you can use my bathtub.